Our scripture this morning is in 1 Corinthians 3, verse 6. It says, I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the growth. The emphasis in this passage is on the fact that it was God that brought growth to people and communities. The early church is in that area. And also that neither Paul nor Apollos was a better leader. They had different things that they did. They were different ways of being and ministering in the community. But both were important and both had value. In fact, he goes on to say, so neither the one who plants nor the one who waters is anything, but only God who gives the growth. The one who plants and the one who waters have a common purpose, and each will receive wages according to the labor of each. For we are God's servants, working together. You are God's field and God's building. He continues in that chapter, but he changes the example. And he talks about the importance of building and building with the right materials and building on the right foundation. The foundation being Christ. And that having a really solid foundation is crucial to the building, to the stability and the longevity of the building. But contrary to the point of the passage, I want to talk about the first four words of verse 6, where it says, I planted and Apollos watered. We know that it's God that causes the growth. But the truth is that we all have a part in it. We have a part in the process. Plants in the garden need tending unless they are in a natural habitat that gives them everything they need. But if we plant things that are in our garden to grow because we want to eat the tomatoes or the fresh fruit or whatever it is, we need to prepare the ground, till up the ground, work it up so that the soil can receive the seed. We have to plant it, either the seed or the young plant. We water it and fertilize it. Have to weed it, choke out all the weeds that get in the way and want to overtake the plant, and then prune it sometimes, depending on what kind of a plant it is. But there is care that we need to do as a gardener taking care of our plants. In the life of the early church, Paul and Apollos nurtured the spiritual lives of the people that were a part of the early church. We know that they visited churches on their travels around the area, and they wrote letters to them. We have copies of those letters as a part of scripture that have been handed down over the years. The letters were really infrequent. They didn't have the U.S. Postal Service that we have today. So they would have been carried by an individual person to a church. And then they would have been circulated, I think, among all the neighboring communities and even farther apart from that, is carried as really precious thing. They wouldn't have had the scriptures as we have them today available to them on a common basis. So having these letters would have been tremendously important. Paul and Apollos taught them many truths, many things, and offered correction when it was needed. They even took apprentices with them, like John Mark, who traveled with Paul and Barnabas for a time when they were on their missionary travels. They traveled throughout the area, a really broad scope of that area, sharing the good news that was so important to them and telling that good news. And wherever they went, people gathered, often in just home gatherings, and started home churches and started communities that really gathered around wanting to be followers of Jesus. So I've been thinking about this. I planted and Apollos watered. And it's pretty clear that this is true, that there is strong human involvement in doing this spiritual life. And while God makes things grow, that we're responsible for our part. We're responsible to do something. As it says that Paul says, I planted and Apollos watered. But what does it mean to plant and water? What was he talking about even? Or what did it mean for us today, really? You know, the truth is, I don't have a very green thumb. I can tell you about two people, Kathy and Kildy. Both of them gave me plants, and I managed to kill them in fairly short order. Then the really telling thing is the next time they gave me a plant, it was a fake plant. Both of them. Kildy went on a trip and was traveling somewhere, and she left me in charge of watering the plants, her plants, while she was gone. Yeah, I got fired. Especially when she came home and poured a cup of water off the Wandering Jew. And after that, I was given very strict instructions. But she found it was actually better to give someone else the job of taking care of her plants. Well, it was Christmas 2005, and I was gathered with my family to celebrate Christmas. We exchanged names, so we were opening those gifts as that went around. And my mother got a plant. And I thought to myself, well, I hope nobody gives me a plant because I'll just kill it. And you know, when it came to my turn, I got a plant. And I just thought, oh no. Now, it was from my nephew, Jonathan. I did not know it, but plants are his thing. And even when he was in college, he had a room full of plants. Not a room full, probably, but he had a bunch of plants in his college dorm room. And so they were important. But he did know, because his mother was Kathy and was one of the ones that had given me a plant once that I managed to kill. So he did know that I had trouble. So he wrote a little note with it. And it was a pothos. He says it's an aprimum arium, whatever. And if you can read Latin, you're better than me. A pothos or a devil's ivy. And then he wrote this. It's native to Southeast Asia, and the pothos takes neglect, low light, and poor watering practices with ease. Now, I want you to know that that was in 2005, and this is the plant today. I have succeeded in not killing a plant, and it does take abuse. It rather well takes abuse. But, you know, I do have to water it once in a while. It is necessary. I usually can wait about a month before I water it. But if I neglect it too much, too many of the leaves fall off. And here last fall, it got really lanky and it was just kind of struggling. And so I took it down off the shelf. I gave it a haircut, trimmed off all the long limbs that were mostly without leaves. Put it in some sunlight and let it grow, and it came back to health, and it's doing quite well. It even has babies that are ready to be planted for the next plot that will go around. So it feels like I have been successful, but it is true that it takes some intention. I need to be intentional. I can't just ignore it, and I have to be intentional about this process of taking care of my plant, my one plant. So I'm grateful that it's thriving again, that it has responded well. But as I've been thinking about this idea, I've been really intrigued by the idea that early Quakers had a nursery of truth. I discovered this when I was reading about Publishers of Truth, which we talked about last Sunday, and how Quakers were first known as Publishers of Truth and the importance of that process of publishing truth. They shared their message widely, and Quakers had come really to understand that God could speak to us directly, that we didn't need to go through a priest or a king or anyone else, that we could just know God directly for ourselves, and that was an important message to get out. There was a strong missionary impulse to tell the good news everywhere. There's the Valiant 60 that went out as early missionaries in those early days to share the good news and went to the ends of the earth, literally telling the good news that Christ has come to speak to his people himself. The numbers of Quakers grew dramatically in those days. And because of their radical message, many were put in prison and they suffered greatly. The expansion continued to the Americas as early Quakers came here with their message. And again, they were passionate and determined, but they weren't always well received. The most dramatic example would be Mary Fisher Dyer, who was one of those early Quakers that came to this country and refused to leave. In fact, when they sent her away, she came back. She would not take the banishment and would not stay gone. And as a result, she faced death because of her persistence in coming and sharing that good news on the soil of this country. Well, those that were traveling to the Americas, often in those days, would have traveled by ship and often stopped in Barbados. Well, there is a dark side to Quaker presence in Barbados. It also became known by friends as the Nursery of Truth. It was a logical resting place on the way to America. From England to America was a logical place that they could stop for respite. There was also less persecution there than there was in either England or in the colonies, in the early colonies. So it was a place where, while there may still be some pushback against their views, it wasn't to the degree that it was in either England or in the colonies. And so as a place of respite, people often settled there either for a time or for a longer period of time. And in time, it became known as a Nursery of Truth, which was a community, a training ground, a sending point for early Quaker missionaries. And it just became a respite. And yet that respite became a place of preparation. But for us today, what does it mean to be a Nursery of Truth? Well, I think before we can be either publishers of truth or nurseries of truth, we really need to be communities of truth. You know, we've talked about the truth that's the most solid when you have the three-legged stool, the faith community, scripture, and our direct listening. And when all of those come together, there's a really solid sense that we have this done well. But any one of those, and it kind of sometimes we struggle. And so there is huge, huge importance in the faith community, in being with a group of people that we can listen together, that we can test our leadings, that we can season them, that we can see what's a part of that, how this is working among us as a community. And it's within the community of truth that we provide the best nursery for truth, where there is a community that we can nurture people and allow them to step into their place among us. But we do need to be intentional about it. Kind of like me watering that plant once in a while, I have to notice that the plant needs watering. I have to pay attention and give it what it needs, whether it be a haircut or a drink of water. So this is important that we are intentional about this nursery of truth among us. I spent Memorial Day up at Quaker Cove at a retreat over the Memorial Day weekend. Quaker Cove sponsored a retreat, and the speaker there was Ruthie Severance. She is a member at East Hill Friends in Kent, and I was sitting beside her pastor when she brought the first message of the weekend and did an excellent job. But her pastor had no idea that she could do that. He had never asked her to bring the message at home, and he commented to me that the cat was out of the bag now, and she would be asked in the future to bring the message at home. But someone noticed. Someone paid attention to the fact that Ruthie actually had a message to share, and that she was capable of bringing such a message, and asked her, invited her to come and share at this retreat for the weekend. And she did do a really good job. Do we notice those who are sitting among us and give them opportunities to follow leadings? We have to pay attention. We need to notice who is here, who gathers with us, who's a part of our community, and what it is that God is doing in their lives may come out of conversation, may just come out of noticing what is already obvious if we pay attention. It may come in a number of ways. But do we give opportunities for people to follow their leadings? Or maybe just to explore the possibility of a leading? I can remember when I said, maybe I'm called to be a pastor. It felt about like that as well, because I wasn't really very sure. So it's okay, but we need to invite people to explore that possibility. Or maybe just a wondering. I don't have a clue, but I'm kind of wondering. I'm not sure, but maybe. Do we make space for people to do a less than stellar job at something? Because face of it, most of us have stumbled. How else did we learn? And so do we make space for people and trust that it will be okay, that that we can grace that, and that that's a part of the process. You know, when I have done poorly, the support of my community has made all the difference. A number of years ago, I was at Reedwood taking piano lessons as an adult, and my piano teacher asked me to play a special number during worship at church. And I was prepared. I knew this piece well. To God be the glory. And I had an arrangement of it. But you know, my fingers were like jello that day. They did not play well. And I knew that I had not done well. But the love of the community, no, you know, they knew that I hadn't done well. That was pretty obvious. But they loved me anyway. And that made all the difference in the world. To know that I was loved, to know that they understood. And I heard stories about other people that had made really big mess ups with something that they, you know, had done in their earlier days. We need to reach out in love and create space where that's okay. Where that's okay. Northwest Yearly Meeting has asked us to complete the sentence for several of us across the yearly meeting, to complete the sentence because of Northwest Yearly Meeting. So I did it and took a picture, which I've sent in, and said that I was born physically, spiritually, and professionally within Northwest Yearly Meeting. And I'm really grateful for the life that Northwest Yearly Meeting has given to me. Northwest Yearly Meeting has been a nursery of truth for me. It really birthed me in many ways. I think probably the earliest memory that I have would be when I was a part of Christian Endeavor. That's what we called it way back in the day. And middle school, because I know I was before the ninth grade, so sixth, seventh, eighth, right in there. In Christian Endeavor, we did our own lessons. So that meant that I was responsible to prepare a lesson to share with my peers. There wasn't, nowadays we tend to do youth group for kids. But in those days, we did youth group for each other. And so early on, learning to do that. In high school, I taught preschool and kindergarten Sunday school classes. In fact, Becky was a part of my class. I remember because she told me she wanted to be as tall as her grandpa Bulgin. I never forgot. But those days, early days of teaching preschool and kindergarten children were a part of just what I did within the church and what they allowed me to do. In high school, I was a leader in the church youth group, and I was the youth superintendent for the Portland area or Portland quarterly meeting, and in charge of all the youth groups and what we got together and did as a quarterly meeting. That also meant that I got to go to a leadership institute in Iowa with a whole busload of people from our yearly meeting, but I was a part of that group that went there while I was in high school. In college, I was on the Friends Youth Exec, and I planned youth events along with other people, whether it be midwinter or Surfside in the summer or yearly meeting events, various things that we did as part of the Friends Youth Exec. I also got to travel around the yearly meeting and speak at various churches. In fact, Carol Landis found a copy of a bulletin one day that had my name in it as speaking at Friends Memorial Church back when I was in college. Now, I don't remember being here because my brother attended here and we came sometimes when we were up here. But I don't remember speaking here as a part of the Friends Youth exec. But I did. My name's right there in black and white. And then I was a youth ambassador at Marion Friends Church one summer. We sent out youth ambassadors to churches. Any church could have a youth ambassador come. You had to provide housing and a small stipend and help them find a job. And I was at Marion Friends and just worked in the church, did a variety of things. I spent a year in Bolivia, first as a med tech, doing lab work, which was the profession I had before this one. And then as a helper with Wycliffe Bible Translators. And it was Friends and Quakers in our yearly meeting that told me about the opportunity, helped me get there, identified it, and supported me the whole time I was there. It was a really important transitional time for me. At Reedwood, I was a part of a team that led worship at nursing homes and went on a regular rotation to go to nursing homes and share a message. After Don Green died, the pastor, the senior pastor at Reedwood, there was a major shuffling of responsibilities in order to fill gaps that he had been doing. The associate pastor that was in charge of Christian Ed took on the senior pastor roles, and Kent Thornburg agreed to be clerk of education if I would agree to be the Sunday school superintendent. So I said, yes, I'll be Sunday school superintendent, and as we stepped into those various roles. A bit later, I was the presiding clerk at Reedwood for about 3 or 4 years and served in that role. And then I initiated an evening service at Reedwood, just something not because I have an agenda that churches have to have evening services, but because this felt like something that I was supposed to do. And I gathered a small group as we sang together and worshiped together and shared among each of us, shared a message with each other, had a time of listening. All of that was before I went to seminary and asked the question about pastoral ministry. And you know the rest is history. In Northwest Yearly Meeting, I've been on the Board of Evangelism, an elder, on the Administrative Council, the Assistant Clerk of the Yearly Meeting, and for one Yearly Meeting, I stepped into the role to be the clerk. And I've been on the pastor, either on staff or the senior pastor at three churches, Mountain View, Spokane, and North Seattle. So really, I owe much to Northwest Yearly Meeting for nurturing me and bringing me up in this who I am and who I'm called to be and how I'm called to live that out. Are we intentional to do the same? To be nurseries of truth for people, places where people can find their voice, can find their calling, find their place of being a God person in this world and among us and out there, but as a part of our extended community. Wes Daniels said, a nursery of truth is a place where we are truly invited to grow. Our ideas are challenged, and where we are invested in the work of becoming apprentices of truth within communities of truth. I think it really starts with noticing. Paying attention to who's among us and to what God is doing in their lives. And getting to know people and inviting them to share some of their story, some of their questions, some of their yearnings with us. I also think we need to get comfortable with failure. This idea that we have to have it all right and, you know, it needs to be all polished and perfected before we step into a role, it really hampers our ability to be a community. And both as those of us that are experienced leaders inviting others to step into new roles, we need to be comfortable with the fact that everybody won't get it well and won't do as good as we might do if we were doing that. But we also need to accept that as people who begin to try new things and to test our own leadings, that it's okay not to be perfect. And just like me not being able to play the piano, that we just want to enfold everyone in love and say, we're with you. We're with you. We understand. We love you. If we don't ever try, we never fail. But we don't grow. And we don't discover that which God has for us. We need to be willing to experiment and try things. They won't all work. Let me tell you, they won't all work. But many will work. And it comes out of that sense of experimenting, of being open to new things and seeing what happens if we do this. We have to take a chance on people. I think that's really critical. We just need to take a chance. And we must mentor people. You know, a good mentor gives us enough handles so that we don't feel like we're just lost out there. I'm all by myself and I don't have a clue what to do. But at the same time, that we're not constricted where we have to do it a certain way and we're not kind of held to a rigid way of being. So there's a great balance in being mentoring, in setting a person free, giving them enough handles, but letting them go and run with it. For me, an important thing is just to jump in and do it, to try it. It's like speaking Spanish. When I went to Bolivia, I just did it. I mean, you know, it's kind of like sink or swim. And for me, I just think that's an important thing, to just be bold and jump in and try it. We need safe places where we can try out our ideas and receive pushback that don't squelch them and kill them, but allow us to stretch the idea and look at it a new way and open it up and get inside of it and what if this and what if that and look at it in a bigger way. Often I only see a very small piece of the pie. And I need those of you that are bigger thinkers to help me see the whole pie. We need to be challenged and do the work so that our knowings are stronger and are tested. And I would ask, what do you need in order to flourish in our nursery of truth? What do you need? Then as we begin this process of creating a new yearly meeting or an association or a grouping of churches or whatever it is that we're going to become that we're not quite sure about yet, that it's imperative that we nurture this new thing and let it take root. It hasn't been planted yet. We're holding the seeds in our hands. And as we gather this week, we will till the soil and plant the seeds. And at home, I ask that you all bathe it in prayer. Prayer like a constant fine mist that waters it deeply. And that we would just image that sense of that fine mist that soaks the earth would just fall over this in a way that nourishes and waters and allows this new thing to take root. We want to be birthed in joy. And in this sense of creating a new thing with God's leading. We want to be Christ-centered Quakers, open to following leadings and welcome to everyone. And creating a healthy nursery of truth will be essential to that process. Let us wait in open worship as we go into a time of listening. And inviting God to listen with us and consider how it is that we can be nurseries of truth, both here and beyond this place. Let us listen.